Welcome to the Volcast podcast. This episode is in partnership with the Climate Action Hub. I'm Ruth. I work for the Climate Action Hub here at WDCVS.
Hi, I'm Christian. I work for Nature Scott.
Hi, Christian. And so for listeners who might not know, what does Nature Scott do?
So Nature Scott are the official kind of advisors on the environment and nature to Scottish Government. We're the statutory nature conservation body. And so we've got a really broad remit, and a lot of it is around regulation. So when people want to do stuff that kind of impacts on protected species or protected habitats, but we're also involved in a lot of the kind of, I suppose, what's more exciting side of things. So we kind of are involved in a lot of the peatland restoration work that goes on across Scotland. And we also administer the Nature Restoration Fund. And just generally provide advice to members of the public and developers and local authorities on all matters to do with the kind of nature and biodiversity.
And Scotland set a target of 30 by 30. What does this mean?
So the 30 by 30 target came out of this international agreement that was set, I think, maybe 5 years ago now. So there's this kind of conference of the parties that was held in Canada just after the pandemic. And as part of that, this global biodiversity framework emerged. And it's around 23 different targets. And the idea is that all of those targets have to be met for the global biodiversity crisis to be averted and to take us from where we're at right now, which is biodiversity going downwards, and bend that curve and kind of put us on track to having a biodiversity rich future. One of those targets is actually one that Scotland, as part of the UK and the high ambition coalition, really pushed to be ambitious, was the 30 by 30 target. And that is to have at least 30% of every country's land and seas protected or conserved biodiversity by the year 2030. It goes a little bit further than this land just being protected or conserved. And it kind of also in the target says about how those areas need to be effective, they should be equitable, they should look to take into account local communities or indigenous peoples. And critically for what we're talking about today, also talks about the fact that those should be well connected. And that's recognizing that whilst it's great to have these areas, which are real powerhouses for biodiversity, the sum will be greater than the parts if they are actually connected together.
So having connected nature areas, having nature networks, if you will, what does that involve and why is that so important?
So it's really important. So if we were to look at Scotland at the moment, then we say we have roughly 18% of Scotland, which is protected for biodiversity. And that's under a lot of kind of different protected area designations which exist. So some of them might be familiar to people. I suppose the most familiar one would be NNRs, so our National Nature Reserves. But also we've got these European sites and we've got SSSIs. And these are all kind of doing great things. They were recognized because these are areas which already held important populations of species or important habitats, which had kind of been pushed to being quite rare across Scotland. But all of these are often operating as islands within a landscape. And so whilst you have a great population of, you know, some kind of rare snail species or invertebrate assemblage, it's very difficult for them to be able to naturally move out of the confines of these protected areas. And so the thinking goes, and it's kind of backed up, thankfully, by a good amount of science, that you can improve the situation for these species and habitats if it's easier for them to move across the landscape in general. And that's going to be particularly important when we're kind of in this kind of climate change era, which we're in now, where even if we kind of meet the climate goals and kind of reduce our emissions and stuff, there is still going to be a warming that's going on. And so some species and habitats which currently are found in one part of Scotland, they will need to be able to move if they're going to continue to kind of thrive in Scotland. And if the landscape remains too toxic for them and it's too hard for them to be able to move through that landscape, then we'll end up losing them. And so by starting to work towards having a better connected landscape across the entirety of Scotland, we can really protect in a much more holistic way, all that great biodiversity we have. And nature networks are one of the key routes in which we can look to increase that connectivity alongside a whole bunch of other stuff that will be going on across Scotland.
Yeah. Yeah, really important for nature to be able to move and kind of stay within their comfort zone climatically as the climate changes and gets warmer and much more different from what we're used to. But it also goes the other way as well, doesn't it? Having strong biodiversity also helps to protect us from the impacts of climate change as well. So how does kind of the work of NatureScot and kind of nature networks, how does that all work in terms of linking up with Scotland's climate goals as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm always reticent to go into facts and figures because I don't have the world's best head for numbers. But I think it's something like 50% of anthropogenic CO2, which is absorbed and taken out of the atmosphere by kind of natural systems, healthy natural systems. So kind of those kind of habitats when they're kind of working well and stuff. And so it's really critical whilst we're doing all this work to try and make sure that we kind of limit the impacts of climate change and we're working towards our climate goals, that healthy ecosystems form a part of that. And so the work that goes on with nature networks and the more kind of broad stuff all will directly be helping to alleviate the impacts of climate change. And that can be, as I say, from taking CO2 away, but also from the nature-based solutions point of view. So that kind of helping to have greener towns and cities, because it's the nature networks framework, from which Scotland's working to bring nature networks into place, makes it really clear that these aren't just for biodiversity, but they're for people too. And by that, it means that there is a real strong focus on making sure that nature networks, as they become kind of spatially defined and become a thing in Scotland, that they're not ignoring our towns and cities. It's not just looking to those areas which are probably quite far away from where many people live in Scotland, but go right into the kind of hearts of our towns and cities. And so there, you know, you can think about the kind of cooling effects of having kind of greener towns and cities, or the kind of reopening of kind of waterways, bringing more biodiversity there, but also, you know, using that water to help, you know, to kind of cool towns and cities.
I guess as well, some areas here in West Dunbartonshire are really prone to flooding as well. So how does restoring nature and having areas of nature help with that kind of thing?
Yeah, so I think nature networks is one of the pieces of work which are kind of, there's a whole tranche probably of work that's going on at the moment across Scotland, which is trying to think about things at a much more catchment scale and a larger scale. So once again, small individual projects, all of them are vitally important, but you do need to think about things at that larger scale. And when it comes to flooding, I think it's about recognizing the fact that an area which is experiencing flooding is probably experiencing flooding because of what's going on along that entire catchment for the river. And so when we think about nature networks, one of the ways in which we sometimes think about them is from kind of source to sea. So from the kind of headlands where the water is kind of often kind of dropping, the whole way down to sea level. And so if you think about a nature network in that kind of context, you would like be looking along that whole kind of catchment and saying, well, what are the stages and what are the different projects which would be really beneficial to biodiversity, to connectivity, but also to big issues which are facing people like flooding. So that will be about maybe restoring peatlands if they're present in the uplands, increasing riparian woodlands along our waterways, all of these things about slowing the flow of water that's going in. And then as we kind of move down from the headlands into kind of farmland and stuff, once again, about making sure that there's those good riparian habitats. There's also, I suppose, examples where kind of individual kind of farmers or clusters of farmers have come together to increase the amount of wetlands which they have across their farmland. Some of those wetlands will be kind of ephemeral, so might dry out during certain times of the year. And then when there's heavy rains, they might fill in again. That's both really great for helping to stop flooding. It's also great for biodiversity because some species actually really need those kind of wetland areas which aren't there the whole time. And others of them will become permanent ponds, which is just a really valuable part of our landscape, which is missing. But all of those little stepping stones will kind of start creating this landscape, which once again is both better connected for biodiversity and so allows biodiversity to thrive, but also for the point of view of people, creating something which is really benefiting us, both from the point of view of the climate, but also I think for everybody, you know, something which is really nice to be able to see happening. And that's, you know, the climate side of things, and the climate change comes with a lot of health implications for people. And I think we shouldn't overlook the fact that seeing that kind of healthier, more restored ecosystem is shown to be really beneficial for people's kind of both physical and mental health. And so it all kind of forms part of this really large, slightly confusing, holistic picture of how we can take these actions in a connected way and start being able to really kind of turn the tide.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of earlier as well, kind of linking in with what you've just said, you mentioned how part of Nature Scott's goals is to really have this be connected with communities and led by communities as well. What's that looked like?
So it's quite early days at the moment on the Nature Network. So the framework, which was co-designed with about 300 people from 100 different organizations, brought together people from across Scotland and said, well, how would you like to see nature networks implemented in Scotland? And I think that probably breaks down to four big asks that came out of it. The framework's there to be found on the Nature Scott website, Scottish Government Framework, but you can find it on the Nature Scott website. And what it was kind of decided that nature networks needed to do was connect together those internationally important areas for biodiversity. So that's kind of ticking that box on the 30 by 30 side, those really big kind of jewels within Scotland's protected area assemblage. It was then decided it was really important that it connected together areas which were considered to be locally important for biodiversity. And I think that's the first stage where it was really starting to be much more people focused. Designations often work on the basis of international agreements. And so sometimes they can be a little bit ignorant, I suppose, of actually what's important to local people and local communities who might be interested in their local nature reserve, their local green space. And that's not going to hit the bar for one of these international designations, but they're really important for biodiversity. They're really important for the local people. And so there is the ask that nature networks connect together those as many as possible. You know, this is only one tool which you have within the toolbox. There was then also the ask in the nature networks framework that nature networks connect together Scotland's towns and cities. And depending on which local authority you are, and sorry, I don't know your own local authority, maybe as well as some, I'm up in Highlands, so quite far away here in Inverness. But it's up for a local authority to decide where they're setting that bar. So I know certainly some local authorities said, we don't have that many towns and cities, so we're going to go with every conurbation of over 2,000 people. We want to make sure that there is a strand of this nature network, which is reaching out and connecting to that so that those people and the work which they're doing there in their community, they can see how it's part of this wider thing which is going on across our entire local authority area. Which then leads to the fourth thing that the Nature Network framework asked for, was that these things don't just work at the local scale, but also work regionally and then nationally. So all the local authorities, whilst they have been tasked with spatially defining a nature network within their own local authority boundary, they're being asked to make sure that they're talking with their neighbouring authorities so that these connections actually form something which then goes across Scotland. And so where we're at with that at the moment is that local authorities are starting to do that work on how they can spatially map a nature network. It's not too prescriptive, the way in which local authorities have been asked to do it. And so there really can be quite a place-based approach, which is about the needs of that local authority. But, and it's quite hard, I suppose, maybe to say this visually, but really, if you were to picture a map of your local authority region and you were to put dots over that map of those areas which are really important for biodiversity, and you were to put dots on those kind of areas where people are living, it's about kind of that spaghetti or that kind of network of vessels which are connecting together all those areas. As local authorities are starting to do that, they're then looking to do public engagement on them. So I think maybe there's already four or five local authorities who have got their first draft of a nature network spatially defined, and they've done these kind of engagement exercises where they kind of go up onto the local authority website. There's loads of questions saying, here are some corridors which are connecting together loads of important stuff with biodiversity, makes it clear to people why it's there. And then it's asking that question, when you look at that corridor, what do you like about it? What don't you like about it? What do you think it's missing? Or if you kind of are in this region, what would you like to see happen on that corridor? And so those which have started to be published already. I think there's some in the much more kind of like rural focus. So I think Aberdeenshire has already put theirs out, but there's also the more urban as well. So Dundee have done a consultation on theirs. And then what local authorities will be needing to do is take all that great information they get from people that live within their areas and start saying, well, how do we now edit this nature network so that it can better take into account what our local communities want it to do as well. And these things don't need to be fixed, by the way. So it's not like a protected area where once that line is on a map, that effectively has become something in perpetuity. I think we know that these engagement exercises are the beginning of a journey and that people will start to become more involved in their nature network in their area as they understand it, as they can start to see it, as the incentives start to line up. So it helps people to be able to take positive action. I think what we'll see is both, you know, a slight realignment of some corridors and also hopefully a flourishing of these nature networks so that actually more people want to be involved and you kind of get more branches or more vessels on those nature networks.
Nice. So it sounds like the kind of being led kind of by local authorities identifying areas in their local area, and then that's then kind of getting all connect up across the nation. So what's the kind of process for, yeah, making sure that all these local nature networks are getting connected up regionally and, yeah, across large areas of Scotland?
A really good question. And it's one of the trickier parts of this is that importance of having it place-based and working on the local, but not then failing on that objective to get it working regionally and nationally. Going back to the framework once again, this is one of the kind of key asks for both the Nature Networks framework about taking forward this piece of work and the other framework that was made at the same time, the 30 by 30 framework. For both of them, there was this ask for there to be a real kind of bottom-up approach to how it was taken forwards. But once again, in both of them, it was also made clear that you leading with a bottom-up approach does not take away the need for there to be some kind of top-down in the process as well. And I think there, that's where we look to the likes of kind of Scottish Government or NatureScot to make sure that they're continuing to have involvement in a helpful way. So supporting that bottom-up approach. But what we can do, I suppose, as a kind of national body like NatureScot is we can work with individual local authorities. So there's 32 local authorities and two planning authorities, the two national park planning authorities in Scotland. And what we're able to do is kind of work with all of them to be able to see, as people start to develop these things, how well they'll be working, interacting with one another, and where people maybe need help to make sure that those interactions result in a meaningful network. As I say, it's reasonably early days, so we don't have that many which are actually published yet, and not that many which are neighbouring one another, which I suppose will be the real litmus test for this. But from the work that we've been doing and the kind of stuff which we go down and get involved in, I think what we're seeing is that local authorities do tend to be naturally, and it's a way of working which they're quite used to, is working with their neighbouring local authorities. So I think we've got quite a lot of confidence that without much NatureScot involvement from the point of view of helping to try and steer anything, that it will be working in this way. And so you kind of have these natural groupings of local authorities who are coming together and saying, well, we're both looking at the same thing. Let's make sure that we're doing this in the most sensible way, because certainly from a biodiversity point of view or a flood risk point of view, as you kind of mentioned earlier, when a drop of rain drops onto the ground, it doesn't really know which local authority boundary it's in. So I think, yeah, our local authorities, thankfully, are pretty clued up and working in this way.
Nice. That's good to hear. And yeah, hopefully it will be nice and successful and we'll see lots of connected areas all throughout Scotland. So it sounds like it's kind of slightly too early days to know what level of success it's having at the moment. But kind of going back to the mention of kind of like flooding and nature cooling cities and stuff, do you have any lovely examples of where people have used nature-based solutions to kind of combat local issues and it's been really successful, and what kind of impact that's had on the community and the environment as well?
So I think if I was to go purely nature networks, then maybe it is a little bit trickier just because of it is, as you say, being in those kind of early days. But that said, there is still some stuff which is already kind of happening on the ground that probably is a really good example of what you might expect. And Edinburgh City Council, I think probably were the first local authority to have this kind of nature network already up and running. They actually started that piece of work before the Nature Networks framework was even in place. And so if you were to go and look, you know, and search out Edinburgh's Nature Network, you can see the kind of, they have this, I think it's 200 plus interventions which they want to do across the city to start forming their nature network. And I think maybe already 50 of those are kind of in place on the ground, action actually happening. And that can be about creating real biodiverse, rich green spaces within the city that can be used for education associated with schools, or kind of work to improve the kind of biodiversity and therefore, you know, also flood resilience of the waterways that run through Edinburgh. So I think having a look at their website is a really good one to get a feel for some of the kind of projects which maybe can contribute towards this. And then on the other side of things, we go the whole way up the country. Not the whole way. It's quite a bit more north than Murray. If you go up to Murray, then there is the Murray Nature Network. And if you were to have a Google of that, two different things are going to come up. Murray Council's Nature Network, where they've done a really good story map so people can understand and engage with the developing nature network there. But there's also a farmer cluster of a group of farmers who came together themselves to look at how they could do various actions across, you know, all the farms which are part of this grouping. And those are actions which will be beneficial to biodiversity. But the primary driver for them as a group of farmers to come together to do this was about being able to make sure that they can continue to farm and provide kind of, you know, food for the nation in a changing climate. So I think those are kind of two great examples of stuff which is already happening, which is directly linked with nature networks. But outside of that, I think it's looking to the kind of nature-based solutions work that's been going on in Scotland for quite a while now. And that is just nature-based solutions is just the nice name that's used for when you're kind of like looking to deal with a societal challenge, is rather than always going down a route which become, at least in modern times, a traditional route of kind of, you know, it's concrete or it's something hard and very engineered, is kind of asking that question of, well, can nature be bought into that, and can there be a solution which incorporates nature? And actually you tend to get more benefits for people and the environment, and often the cost actually can ultimately be lower than going with a hard solution. And so, you know, Nature Scot helped with the manage the Green Infrastructure Fund. And there's some really great projects that have come out of that, like the Clay Pits Local Nature Reserve. And that was kind of both increasing connectivity across a community while simultaneously improving it for biodiversity. And once again, there's a really good kind of case study that can be found online if you want to dig further into that. I think maybe just, I don't want to keep on going on too much. The other kind of ways that you can look at these existing projects, which are delivering against nature networks, even if they were started before nature networks as a policy existed, would be, you know, the kind of landscape scale size projects, such as the Cairngorms Connect one, which is going on within the Cairngorms National Park Authority. And that's a really ginormous area where you have loads of big land holdings which are coming together to say that they want to restore the land. And that's going to have all of those both biodiversity and climate benefits to people that were kind of mentioned earlier. But it's a ginormous scale, and it's really exciting to see that happening. And then the final one, I suppose, would be more at that kind of catchment / wider community scale. I think looking to the Leven project, which once again is kind of like, it's quite a large scale project, not the same, you know, size as Cairngorms National Park, but is doing great things along the Leven and is kind of both once again increasing biodiversity, flood resilience, cooling that kind of area, and has a real nice people focus in creating an area which is also really nice for the local communities to be able to use. So, yeah, I'm co-opting a bunch of stuff there, but I think that is very much, you know, the Nature Networks framework does kind of make it clear that just because something's been given this name within the policy landscape of Nature Networks, the way in which it's going to be implemented. Often we'll be building on great stuff that's already going on the ground, great initiatives that are already going on. And it's actually more about bringing together many of these initiatives than it is about creating something brand new. It's just bringing it all together in one place. And that kind of makes it slightly easier, I suppose, to converse about it and to be able to help support work that wants to go on in this space.
Building a network, you could say.
I like that.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much, Christian. It's been a delight having you. And this has been really interesting. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ruth. Thanks. Cheers, everyone.